right, welcome back to the I'm Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Freyway, and I'm here with my amazing co-host, Kenny.
The Avatar.
And yeah, we're here to finish out Avatar live action on Netflix. And my opinions have adjusted a bit since the review of the first four episodes we talked about in great detail. About the first four, we did half the season, and then we're going to cover the other half. And also just talk about the show as a whole, I think, since we have the full picture now.
Yep.
So let me just start off by saying this. Up or down what?
Well, your opinions have changed.
Oh, they're down. The opinions are down. The opinions are fucking certainly down, Kenny.
So real quick, this has been the same, I think, response from everybody I know that have seen it, including myself. Episode like one and the first couple like episodes, I had some complaints, some flaws, but overall, I enjoyed it. As it went on, and as I got to the latter four episodes, more and more of the episodes, and overall, was I like, why?
Yeah.
And this has been the response of almost everybody I know that have seen it, where like it starts off and everybody's kind of like, okay, it's not perfect. The actors are kids, whatever, but it's fun. And then you get toward the end and you're kind of just like, Aang still hasn't bent water.
Bro, I have a list of gripes because now that I've seen everything, I know what's not in it, right? So there was this hope when I watched the first half of the season, there was hope that things that I hadn't seen yet were going to be a part of the next four. And now that I've concluded eight episodes, right, and this is now a mixture between season one and season two of the original, I'm like, okay, you guys just completely dropped the ball on a lot of things. The main thing that bothers me about this Avatar show is that it is way too fucking dark. It is actually way too Christopher
Nolan. There's no fun.
Bro, so one of the things I remember about the original Avatar, now granted, I want to preface this by saying that I watched the original Avatar when it aired in real time, which was over 15 years ago.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple times, so.
Yeah, I've only ever seen it once, technically, and it was when I was a young teenager, right? So, like, literally, Avatar was airing when I was in my young teenage years. This is a show that I literally grew up with, right? In 2004, I was a teenager. So I watched the show. I thought it was amazing. But one of the things I remember about it fondly, even though I haven't seen it in so long, one of the things I fondly remember is that it was funny and it was like a happy show, despite the fact that there were certainly hard times, depressing subject matter, things like that sprinkled throughout. But the camaraderie between Aang, Sokka, and Katara throughout the entire series, and then eventually Toph gets added, the camaraderie between the gang was just more upbeat, more happy, more uplifting. And I've watched all eight episodes and I was waiting for the tone to slightly change at some point. This is a fucking sad show. It is dreary as hell. At no point does anyone have any fun. Like, literally, this Aang is depressed. Like, this Aang needs therapy.
Aang never, ever has fun. And I do think it's like a core problem with the way he's written in this show.
This is not Aang. This I officially want to say in the first episode that we did, the first four episodes, I was like, okay, I can, like, he's, you know, he seems pretty Aang-ish. He's no longer Aang-ish to me.
Because, and I've heard some people say that, oh, what they did is they made the show more focused. And I just disagree, because at the end of the day, this isn't how Aang, like, the problem is you gave Aang all his focus and took away all his childlike. He's 12, which we've talked about in the first time, the first part of this. He's 12 years old. He's not really supposed to be this focused yet. He doesn't realize the true like
gravity.
That's the word I'm looking for. He doesn't realize the true gravity of the situation he's in. And there's moments of it, sure. And there's moments of his anger and realizing things are serious. But he's also the same guy that wants to like go play with penguins and shit and just do random shit because he's 12.
There are so few smiles throughout these entire eight episodes. I remember in episode two with the Kyoshi Temple people, one of the coolest things was that when they got there and Sokka was very clearly attracted to the main girl and he was talking to her and telling her how he was the protector of his village as well. And she was like, you're the protector? And it was that little exchange. And after they separated, they show Aang and Katara standing behind those two. And Aang is looking at Katara and he has this huge kid-like smile on his face. So this is episode two, and I'm seeing Aang in a super jovial way where he's like, only a child would think it's so funny that like your friend is flirting with a girl. He clearly likes a girl, but the girl is kind of shooting him down. Aang was so thrilled by that and so like childlike about like, oh, you like a girl. Like he had that kind of smile on his face. After that, there hasn't been a single fucking moment of laughter.
Man hasn't smiled since.
He has not smiled since episode two, and I'm not even joking. Every episode has just been so dark and dreary, and The Dark Knight Rises, the Christopher Nolan of it all. And I love The Dark Knight, but literally Batman is supposed to have that feel to it, right? Batman does well with the whole gritty, brooding, dark, mm-hmm. living in a cave. Everything has this like sepia tone to it, right? Devoid of color. You know what I mean? Like The Dark Knight does well with that. Those are some of the best movies of all the hero genre, especially now that we have a huge scope of hero movies to look at, and a lot of them are just trash. The Dark Knight stands out even more amongst all the trash as being one of the best. And despite it being dreary, it is just really well done. But it does not do well with Avatar because this isn't the essence of the show that we watched as teenagers in the early 2000s. This is not. These characters were not this fucking sad. Okay?
They weren't this sad. It wasn't this dark. There was dark themes. And there, I mean, the original cartoon show made for kids did still have genocide in it, right? Yeah. Like it was still had dark themes, but it was a really fun, happy show to go through. And you would get moments of seriousness. And the seriousness was highlighted and felt even more poignant because they felt serious, because everything else wasn't so serious. The rest of the series was fun and lighthearted. So when it was serious, it was pointed and you felt it. Whereas here, the tone is always serious. And it really does feel like, it feels like they were like, oh, we got to make a serious show for adults. Like it's almost the opposite of what M. Night Shyamalan did, where he claimed his movie was, I made this movie for kids, not for the edgy teenagers and adults.
His was goofy that are now, shit, and I don't mean
that are now grown up. And yeah, but now the Netflix version is kind of the opposite, where it took all the goofiness out and it's just kind of made for adults for the
like
most part.
Like I said, Ivan was talking about the one scene in episode one where Aang was riding around on his air scooter.
Airball.
Scooter. I thought that was such a cool. I forgot that he invented that technique. I found that out while doing some research today. Like first of all, Aang is an airbending master, which I didn't really like. I know he was considered a prodigy, which can translate to like also master. There are 36 forms. He completed 35 out of 36, apparently. He has all his markings because of all the training that he's gone through and surpassed and like just overachieved. Aang is an overachieving airbender. So a lot of things make more sense to me in terms of like his power level, because he is a bit OP. When I watch him fight against groups of people, he just like solos them very easily. And I do like that the main character is strong. I really don't want a weak main character. I do complain sometimes when main characters and things are like a little too OP. But Aang is like at a reasonable level where he can lose fights, right? And he does lose fights in the original. But he also just like, if you're a grunt, you're not dealing. And I'm okay with the main character beating grunts every time. I do not mind that. I will be a little annoyed, though, if the main character at any point went up against like Uncle Iroh or Azula or the Fire Lord or something like that, and he was able to just like best them. That would be a little bit ridiculous. But if he's fighting like Zuko or something and he's able to beat Zuko, it makes sense, because even though he was 12, they do show flashback of like, yeah, he was so strong that he almost killed every kid on top of the Airbender's temple when he was young. So to my point, like, I think that Netflix did a lot of the action and stuff like that and scaling of Aang very well, but I think that all of the joy has been sucked out of the show. It is just like the most dramatizing thing. It's too drama filled. There's no fun to be had. These characters don't feel like they're on an adventure. And the original just felt like kids on an adventure where, yes, saving the world was a part of it, but it was also kind of like secondary.
It was until things got more serious.
Yes.
The thing is, they start off the show, and I'm not sure if this is brought up. I'm not really sure if this is, I don't remember if this is really talked about in the Netflix show. It probably is, but I don't remember. But in the original cartoon, they don't even know that there's kind of a clock on. Right. Like, because there's a clock, Sozin's comet's going to come again. And they don't know this in the cartoon. And so they're kind of just fucking around and having fun. And it makes sense. Aang's a 12-year-old kid. But there is a clock that they don't know about. And at some point, I don't remember exactly when, but at some point, Aang finds out that Sozin's comet is coming back, like, the end of the summer, end of the year.
Yeah, end of the summer, I think.
And he's got to get his shit together. Like, you don't have that
Isn't
much time.
Isn't it another Avatar that together. Tells him that, too? It's like Roku or something?
Yeah, it's Avatar Roku, yeah, that tells him. And he's like, Aang, like, you don't have... And that's kind of the start of Aang becoming a bit more serious. But he still keeps some childlike nature about him. But that's the start of him becoming more serious. But you've had all this, everything before that happens.
Yeah, and now that I've seen all 8 episodes, I also want to say they did strip a lot of Katara's character away. So originally, I know one of the things about her even traveling with him was that she wanted to go see a master, and they did eventually do that, where she wanted to see a master. It was much later. It wasn't the reason why she went with him, like it wasn't the original. I'm fine with that part, as long as at some point they acknowledge that, like, Katara intends to train under a water master. That eventually did happen. What did not happen, though, is the relationship between her and Aang in terms of waterbending was one of jealousy in the original. And And that is like a big part of her character because that's a very human emotion. These characters have been stripped of things that I think the Netflix executives thought would be a little too, like, not cancelable per se, except Sokka. Sokka got stripped because they thought it would be cancelable. But like, I was watching this one YouTube video, I sent it to Kenny earlier, where this guy was kind of going off for 36 minutes about it. It was, the video has like 2.2 million views, and it's actually really good. Some of the stuff he says I don't agree with, but some of the stuff he says I genuinely do agree with. And one of the things he was talking about was like, yes, Sokka is a sexist, right? Yes, mm-hmm. Katara does have jealous tendencies and stuff like that. Aang is a little too childlike in a moment where he needs to be serious, but then you have to remember he's 12. These are character flaws, but character flaws make people relatable. They make characters. Yes.
Like, that's what makes them character. Like, they're human flaws. Like, we all have them.
None of us
are perfect, right? So when you take all the flaws away from your characters, you're just like, what's happening?
You're left with shells. And I realized as I was watching this that these characters are way too focused on this, like, this big goal, and there's nothing else going on. They're just so focused on this goal of, like, gotta save the world, gotta stop the Fire Nation. There is nothing in between. And the original show just had a lot in between that gave you development. Even Bumi, the interaction with him where I was saying in the last episode, I thought he was a little too serious to the point where I didn't even realize that he was serious until it was too late. And I was like, wait, he's actually not joking. He's being, the things he was saying were so ridiculously over the top. Like, you abandoned the whole world when everyone needed you the most. And like, he was just coming at Aang in this crazy way. And at no point did it occur to me like, oh, they changed his character to actually be, he's genuinely mad. Like, he's genuinely pissed off at Aang, this 12-year-old, like, Aang is 12, bro. You are 112. You're actually 112. You guys were the same age. And now, like, Aang is still 12, actually. And you are just letting him fucking have it. And it was kind of crazy to me that that was a thing. Not to say that,
like, it was his fault. Like, it'd be different if Aang showed up, right?
Yeah.
And Aang was 112, and you could be like, oh, you've been hiding for 100 years.
Right.
But Aang still, so, like, you can tell, oh, something went wrong. Like, you're still a child.
Right? Yeah. Like, actually, the mindset and everything, Aang is very clearly a child. And he has just this super depressing demeanor about him at all times. Not that Aang did. He was down at certain points. There were definitely points in the original show where Aang was down. Mm-hmm. But this Aang is always down.
He just bitches too much. Yeah. I mentioned it in the first episode that he's really whining.
I couldn't really get what you were saying because I was like, not really. Not the first four episodes, not yet. Like, he wasn't that bitchy in the first four. The next four, bro.
That's why, I wasn't sure what that, when we did the first recording, I wasn't sure what to. And but yeah, like, he gets just whining, and he gets whinier and whiner. On the note of, like, Katara's jealousy, like, it is something that frustrates me because they make in the Netflix show, they make Katara, like, OD. Like, she, Katara's OD in the cartoon.
Yes.
But what's very clear in the cartoon is that she practices harder than, like, she practices way harder. The point of jealousy was that Aang is a prodigy, like we already established. He was an airbending prodigy. He's the Avatar. When he starts learning waterbending, he learns it really fast and he gets really good really quickly. And he gets better than Katara in some ways. And it frustrates Katara because she's been practicing so much more and she's older than him, etc. In this, she doesn't ever really get a master. She doesn't get a teacher. There's nobody really compete with her because Aang never learns how to waterbend. And every episode, she does a new broken thing with waterbending.
Yes, she does.
It's like unexplained why and how she does it. She just is better every episode and does some new fly shit with waterbending.
You're absolutely right. There's nothing in between either. Every scene that you see her do waterbending, she starts copying the earthbender's disc throwing thing, which I think is really cool. That's like her thing that she took from something else. I like that she was influenced by another style of bending, brought it into waterbending and started utilizing it. I think that's amazing. What I don't like, they never even show her practicing this shit. They just show her fighting a master and actually holding her own against this master, right? Like, I want to say, not all of this show is bad. The parts are good are the fucking action sequences, the way it looks. So to be clear, this looks absolutely insane. From a CG standpoint, from a fight and choreography standpoint, the fight between Katara and the waterbending master is OD. Okay.
That fight is fucking good, man.
That fight is so
really good.
Because you could tell
when I was watching it, I was like, holy shit.
You could tell he starts off like holding back a lot, right? Like he's not trying to do the most because she's a girl. And he believes, and this is just how it is, that women are not fighters. They're not strong enough. Men are the fighters, women are the healers. And that's just the way the world works in the Avatar world for the water tribe. And it makes sense because even in real life, only in the last 100 years or so, have women been given more rights? Not even 100 years, because I mean, 100 years ago, you take it to 1920s, like women didn't have a lot of rights. So within the last like 50 or so years, women have been given a lot more rights and autonomy over their bodies, over who they can be, what they're allowed to do in terms of work and profession and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there was a time in real history where women weren't allowed to have their own bank accounts. Like they weren't allowed to. So it's just crazy, right? So when you're watching Avatar, it reflects, like, art imitates life. So it reflects mm-hmm. a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, old concepts, old traditions of the way the world used to be. And so, yes, yeah, sexism is a big part of it. And taking it away from characters to make them fit into the 2024 mold of what people are trying to be now is a bit ridiculous because, again, these characters are no longer, they don't feel real. They don't feel fully realized anymore. They just feel like husks. Just going about, like, Sokka just likes every single girl that he comes across. Like, okay, that's cool.
That's the thing, too. It felt so weird because, like, once again, whether or not the runtime, we talked about the math the last time, whether or not the actual minutes of runtime is the same, a little less, or a little more than the original show. The way it's paced, it feels like Sokka is just, like, finding a new girl to get horny for, like, every other episode, and it felt like he was like so in love with this last girl and then he meets a new girl and like is kind of so in love with her. And then like, you know, we're talking about it. Spoilers. We're talking about the whole show. But then like the end, it's like he knew this one girl, Princess Yue. He knew her for what felt like 5 minutes.
Yep.
And then is like super distraught when she died. Like, I get it. It is sad when somebody dies, especially if you're in vicinity of it. It is a sad thing to experience. Right. But it was like Sokka was heartbroken. It was just like, I don't really understand.
Yeah, it was a
his
bit
attachment
ridiculous.
To this person.
Yeah, a lot of it, I'm having a hard time really feeling connected to the characters. Even like Iroh had that really good scene, but then the guy in the video that I watched on YouTube did explain why me and you feel emotional about that scene.
Okay, so I haven't seen this. Let me just say, because you saying this probably makes me feel like he probably says the same thing I'm going to say. I said this when I watched the episode with Connie, Anthony, and Ant's husband, Kevin. And I don't remember if it was right after we watched the episode. It might have been right after we watched the episode. I don't think it was after we watched all the episodes. But I was saying that this scene happens really early. The buildup and the development between Zuko and Iroh hasn't really happened yet. No. And they're showing us this scene. This scene happens way later in the show. And I think that, like, I think it was an amazing scene. It was very touching. I got teared up a little bit while watching it. However, I feel as though the reason why I felt so emotional watching it and why I thought it was so good is because I already know the story. Like, yes. I already know the story. I already know Iroh. I already know the buildup. So I'm a victim of already seeing the cartoon and it making it better. I had the same argument about the One Piece Netflix thing. There's things in the One Piece Netflix show that I think are really good, but I can't figure out if I think it's good because they did a good job or because I already watched One Piece and already like the things I'm seeing.
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter. I think it's more of because you already know the story. So when you're seeing things unfold, you're just happy about seeing it in a different medium. At least that's what it was for me. And I brought that up, like, I like One Piece in every medium I've seen it in so far. I like the anime. I like the manga, right? So it's very easy for me. I like all the movies that I've seen. It's very easy for me to then go into a show that's live action, even though live action tends to be like pretty shite historically. They're getting a lot better. Like this Avatar series, for all intents and purposes, it's a lot better than almost every other live
action.
And
it looks really good, right?
Oh, fantastic. And one of the things that was
reminds
bad about
me
the
of Demon
ones,
Slayer.
What do you mean by that? Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Demon Slayer. my brain took a second to like, what do you mean by that? Like, there was a second where I didn't. It was like, what do you mean by that? Okay, it caught me. I realize now what you're saying. It looks very nice. In terms of substance, though, it's a little lacking, right? So, and we have said that, like, this Avatar live action is probably the best looking out of every single live action I've ever seen so far from a cartoon or anime being adapted into a live action. I've never seen anything. When Aang was possessed by the water spirit or like fused with the water spirit or whatever the fuck he did, that shit, the animation on that gigantic Blastoise, amazing. It just looks so good. Even the fireballs being sent at it to like try to take it down when it crashes into the mountain, all the warships shooting fireballs at it doing like a huge wave. It just, the way they show him inside of it too, with like all the air spinning around him and stuff like that, it just looks really nice. Back to the fight with the Water Master and Katara, that entire fight choreography, it kept escalating. And I really like that feeling of it. It started off very mild, right? It started off with her just like, first of all, he didn't want to fight her. So she just slapped him in the back of the head with like water. I was like, okay, that's pretty rude. And he turns around. He's like, all right, you want to go? Let's fucking go. And he pulls out like a bigger whip of water. And then she pulls one out. And then they go at it with just those. And then it gets to the point where like, okay, now we're using ice. And ice, they don't explain it really in the show. They just kind of like, you just see it happening. But no one really says like, this is something that is not easy to do either, to turn water into ice instantly like that.
Yeah.
And so they're doing this and they start going to ice battles. She starts doing her thing with the slicing of the like a pillar, and she slices it into discs and throws it at him. And again, this is something that no one else has seen really, because even the kids, when they come up to her later in this episode, they're like, that was awesome. How did you do that? That fucking thing with the disc, like, where did you get that from? And she explains like, oh, you know, I got it from an earthbender. And so as she's fighting a guy, though, I was a little bit like, there's no way that she should be anywhere near his level. This guy is 60 something years old, and he is he's an actual master. He's 60 years old. He's a master. He's very, very broken. She holds her own against him. And then at some point he starts Sub-Zero sliding around her on ice, and it just looks wild. Like, it literally insane. There was also one part where he like flips her and she lands on top of a water fountain, and before she like fully lands, she turns the whole water fountain to ice and she like lands on it, and she does that thing that Black Widow does in every movie. When she lands, she does like the whip up thing.
The
head whip up thing. She does that little thing, and I was like, oh shit, like Katara's a bad bitch. But at the end of the day, as cool as all that is, it still doesn't take away the fact that like, I don't really believe that Katara should be on par with this guy after the way the show paced it. Right. In the cartoon, you know, it takes her so many episodes, so much development before she starts becoming this good at waterbending. But
and we see her in so many more fights, like so many more action sequences, so many more times when Zuko catches up to them.
Yeah.
And has a fight with them, because like it takes like by the point we're at now, we've already kind of seen them work with Zuko. Right. Like there's the episode where Zuko and Aang, like Zuko's like, maybe that happens in season one. I don't remember. But even if it does, I feel like it happens really late. I just think there's so many more instances of Zuko being a villain before they get a chance to show him being kind of not necessarily friendly, but more reasonable than the other firebenders they're dealing with.
Yeah, I grew up believing that Zuko was evil for a very long time. And that could be my perception of time as a teenager versus my perception of time as an adult. But I do think that Zuko did feel villainous for a much longer time in the show originally than he did. By the way, Zuko was really only a villain in this live action for like four episodes. By episode 5 and 6, where he's breaking him out, like he's a hero, you know, like he's at this point, by episode six, he's fully a hero. So that's not enough time. Like 5 hours of Zuko being a villain is just not enough time for me to believe in his villain. I don't know. The characters are so different and they're so sped up. Like Katara becomes a master. She's a master by the end of this first season. And I think that's a bit ridiculous because Aang hasn't ordered.
She has that cheesy line that Zuko says like, oh, you found yourself a waterbending master. She says something like, I am her, something like that. Like,
and then one of the kids, they call her like Master Katara. And she's like, I'm not a and then she like pauses and she's like, well, shit, I guess I am. But it just all happens too fast. I think that it's a bit ridiculous to start calling her a master. She was literally learning how to, first of all, she didn't even know that you could heal until she got there. And then when she, she didn't know that water healed. So
she didn't even know that was a skill set she could have. She didn't realize that was like part of her skill tree.
Yes. Like her skill tree had healing in it. And she didn't know. She sees the girl doing healing and she's like, oh shit, that's awesome. Can you show me how to do that? And they show her how to do it. And she's like, you know, guiding the water down the chakra lines and all that stuff, which I thought was cool. Right. That's one of the only training you actually see her going through. It's literally guiding the water down the body. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. I'm sure that if somebody got injured that they wanted to heal, she would have been able to fully heal that person back to perfect health in that same episode, because that's just the pain. I expected it. I was like, oh God, she's going to heal somebody to full health out of nowhere. In the same episode that she learned it.
They talked about waterbending healing and they showed that they can do it and they showed her learning how to do it, but they didn't show the need of it happening, I don't think.
No.
Like, nobody... They didn't really show anybody actually getting cleric, which is interesting.
That is interesting.
But I mean, you know, we'll show it in the next season. But the way this show has gone, they usually show something and then show you do it right away. So I'm surprised that like nobody needed to be healed.
Everything has instant gratification in this show, and it's a bit annoying. Aang, I think one of my other biggest gripes, besides the characters just being so fucking depressed and serious, is that Aang just doesn't do any other bending in the entire show. Outside of him mm-hmm. being in the Avatar state, which doesn't count. I do not count that because that's not even really him. No. That's not just him anyway. Base Aang never ever water bends, earth bends, fire bends. And water bending, like Kenny said, it came very easy to him in the original show. He was water bending in the first 10 episodes. Like,
yeah,
Aang is a water bender very early on, and not just like a regular water bender either. He is a fucking
Let me make something real clear. He fire bends in season one. In season one of the cartoon, Aang learns how to waterbend fairly quickly, and then he finds like a basically like a like this old retired Fire Nation guy, and he's like, Aang decides like, oh, this guy's going to be my firebending man, and he's talking to him, and the guy's like, no, like I won't teach you firebending. He's kind of like sworn off doing it. He doesn't want to do it anymore. He says like fire only destroys.
Yeah,
like, there's no like I'm not going to teach this to you.
One of the reasons why when you asked me like what bending would I choose to have, I was like, I don't really want firebending because I don't see what I would do with it personally. Like, it doesn't seem useful in regular life applications outside of maybe cooking and stuff like that, which I don't do anyway.
So then eventually Aang convinces guy to help teach him, and like the guy gives him like a leaf, and Aang has to like light the leaf on fire and then control the fire on the leaf so that the leaf doesn't engulf in flames, like keep the fire in the center of the leaf and not let the rest of the leaf burn up. And like train him, he's like training him how to control firebending. This is in season one. And then some stuff happens. Aang, in his hubris of being 12 years old and how quick him being an airbending prodigy, which he already knew, he was better than so many other people in airbending and all of the peers he ever saw. And waterbending, he picked it up very quickly and became as good as Katara very quickly. And Katara had to work very hard to become a better waterbender. So when it came to firebending, him being 12, him having hubris, and him being a prodigy and everything else, he quickly kind of skipped steps in his firebending training and like went further. He ends up injuring Katara, and it traumatizes him and scares him away from firebending, and takes him a very long time from ever even trying to firebend.
Remember, he wouldn't do it for a
my
very
point
long
is
time.
In season one of this show, he hasn't even waterbended yet, let alone show us his hubris, the childlike nature of him. And then, like, once again, that's another example of him being so childlike and so not serious, him not taking fire seriously. And then it's causing pain.
Thing.
And then him realizing, like, holy shit. And that adding a little inkling of seriousness into his character. You know what I mean? Like, instead of him already being serious, he's a child. And things happen to him, either because his own fault or somebody else doing it to him, that adds more seriousness to his character as time goes on. And, like, that's all skipped. And now what? We're going to get to season two? Is season two going to start and he just starts waterbending with no explanation? Like, what's going on? Because he still has to earthbend. Like, season two, he needs to learn how to earthbend.
And
he hasn't waterbended yet.
Earthbending is actually the hardest bending that he undergoes in the original. Like, he has a very hard time earthbending. He picks up all the other bendings, like Kenny said, very easily. My man gets to earthbending and it is hell. He just cannot do it well. It's just every bending is not the same. I like that about it too. Like, I like even the explanation you just gave about fire and how in order to really control fire, you have to not destroy everything around you. So start with a leaf. And if you can truly just control the fire within this leaf, right? That's amazing. Like, I like how that. And then he was explaining to Katara in the live action and in the original show about how he thinks about waterbending and how, you know, he takes teachings from airbending and applies them to waterbending. And it actually works. And I think that maybe water and air are kind of like synonymous with each other in a way that you can use them to bend. Like, the way you bend one is similar to the way you bend the other, and that's why I translate so well. Fire, not the same, and earth also not the same. So when he tries to apply whatever principles that made him a prodigy in the other two, it doesn't work out that way, and he ends up doing more harm than good with the fire bending, and then he ends up just struggling straight out with earth bending to the point where he's like, what's wrong with me? Like, why do I fucking suck at this? Especially, and this is another character thing about him, and hopefully we get to see this, but when you're used to things coming naturally to you and being very easy to you, the second you run into a wall where something is hard, it frustrates you. It makes you kind of angry about it. It can make you pissy towards people who are just trying to help. Like, they're literally just trying to help.
Yeah.
But you get kind of like an attitude with them. Like, I don't really need your help. I get it. I'll get this on my own. Like, you get very pissy about it. I'm like this myself, especially when I was younger. Like, I was very good at a lot of things that I did because I only tend to do things that I pick up quickly. So when I don't pick up something quickly, I tend to just like, I don't want to do this because I'm not getting it fast enough, which is why I didn't really like sports.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my hand-eye coordination, for whatever reason, with a basketball was terrible. With a controller in my hand, I'm amazing. Like, I can play video games very well. At a young age, I was playing a ton of video games and I was just good at them. The second you put me into a basketball court or a football field or whatever, and you're like, all right, use your hand-eye coordination for this, I just couldn't do it. And it made me frustrated with sports and made me be like, okay, fuck it, I just won't do these. Now, on top of that, I also had asthma and stuff like that. And I explained this on a podcast, but
yeah,
like,
yeah,
the asthma was a huge contributing factor because I couldn't run. And like, you can't fucking run, then you can't play sports. That's just the law of the land. So yeah, when he tries to do earthbending in the original series and is like, I can't really do this, he gets kind of turned off by it and frustrated by it. And I'm just hoping that stuff isn't lost because we haven't seen him do anything but airbend.
Yeah, and like similarly, you know, you have somebody like Katara who is in a weird similar situation where they, in some ways, Katara is a prodigy, but I think of her more like Rock Lee in that she trained really hard and practiced more than everybody else to become as good as she is. Whereas in this, like we said, she kind of just is really good at waterbending and never really trains or practice. Like, she does like a little bit of training and then she just can do it. And
yeah, episode Aang one, she is, can't even make a bubble.
Hasn't done.
She's lifting up a bubble in episode one, like an actual fucking, the tiniest bubble is being lifted in episode one. I'm not even kidding. And her brother, like, he catches her doing it or whatever like that. And he scolds her for it. And it's like a whole big deal. Like, oh, you're trying to waterbend again, which means that she's so bad at this point in episode one, right? She meets Aang. Aang and her have this one moment where in the original show, he's waterbending and making fucking a tentacle monster and shit and doing all this crazy shit. And they're like playing around. They just throw water at each other, but he teaches her how to bend water better by saying something to her. From that point on, dog, she's a waterbending master for the rest of the show. Literally, yeah. From that point on, every time you see her, it's just upgrade, 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 upgrade. And it's like, I don't get how she's doing this.
Yeah. And it's just weird because now she's a prodigy. We already know Aang's a prodigy. And you know, there's different kinds of prodigy is the point I'm getting to. I feel like they made Katara a different kind of prodigy. And I do think it takes away from her character, because the whole reason why I brought this up is in contrast to Aang, where we know Aang picks things up very well. He's very good at things and he expects himself to be good at them quickly. And he gets frustrated when he doesn't get earthbending right away. Katara is the opposite, where she knows what it's like to struggle, knows what it's like to practice and actually work for the skill, because she has seen people above her be better than her and she had to work toward getting there. And now they're kind of both in a similar light. Like, I feel like Katara is probably still going to give him a pep talk anyway, even though she has no right of giving him that pep talk, because she doesn't actually experience things in the other direction. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
She's a product. She picks things up just as quickly as he does.
There's no difference between those two.
So she can't really pep talk him. Like, she'd run up against the same wall that he would.
Now that you're saying that, the relationship between those two, I wonder how it's going to develop in the future seasons, because she did not struggle. No. Right? Like, after they have that talk where he tells her about, like, oh, my master taught me how to airbend, and then she takes that and applies it to waterbend, and she starts doing it. From there on, she's a master. So it's like, mm-hmm. when it's time for her to give him any advice, it's going to be like, well, what fucking advice can you really give? You just picked this up so easily. What I will say is,
you're just out here.
Despite the fact that basically Aang, Katara, Sokka's, their characters are very devoid of who they were originally, I think Zuko's character is really well done.
Yeah.
He does seem like Zuko. The only thing that's wrong, and then we said this already, is that like, he just becomes a good guy so fast that I don't think the audience, if you've never seen Avatar, you don't realize that Zuko was really that guy in the first several seasons.
Yeah, like, they just kind of fast track him. But in general, I have very few bad things to say about Zuko or Iroh.
Yeah, I think that the Fire Nation in general is pretty well done. Like, I even messaged you. I straight up said that the Fire Lord is a cunt. Okay. The way he treats his daughter, his son, his subordinates, I actually do not like it. It and this is good though. He gives me the same feeling that Cersei gave me in Game of Thrones.
Manipulative
cunt. Like, literally, I can't describe him any other way. As I was watching him, I was like, yo, whoever wrote his lines is just an asshole. Everything he says, he's just like, it's like, bro, how do you only speak an asshole? He doesn't say a single thing encouraging ever. It's always to put you down and to make you feel bad about yourself. It makes you feel like you're never good enough. He's a narcissist to the fucking nth degree. I dare say a sociopath. This guy's fucking nuts. He literally traumatizes his daughter for sport. Like, he just straight up.
Yeah, yeah.
This entire season, he has been manipulating her. And it is, like, kind of hard to watch because now we're watching human people. When it was a cartoon, it's one thing, right? Because he's equally awful as a cartoon. But I think that this human one, seeing a human treat another human like this, it grinded my gears the way he treated Azula this entire season. Like,
yeah.
Second fiddle, manipulation.
It's interesting, too, because now I'm not saying for... His name's not Sozin. His name's not Azulon either. Ozai, yeah. I'm going through because there's Azulon,
yeah.
Who is Ozai's father. And then there's Sozin, who is Azulon's father. Azula's named after Azulon. Anyway, yeah. And I was going through their family tree. I was trying to get the Ozai. Anyway, I'm not saying this is a bad thing. It is a different thing. And I think what they did with Ozai in season one is pretty cool. Like, Ozai is pretty cool. What I'm saying is different. I'm going to explain what I'm trying to say is that in season one of the cartoon, you don't ever see Ozai's like a shadow.
Yeah, he is.
He's like the Fire Lord. And you don't really know of him. Like you don't get his personality. He's just like a menace, and they don't put a face to him until much later. And then when they put a face to him, he's a piece of shit. But he stands as like this force of nature, this person that you don't know who he is, what he looks like. He is just the Fire Lord that kind of invokes fear for such a long time. And then eventually he gets introduced. They don't do that here. They introduce him much more quickly and let you know who the character is. I'm not saying that is a bad thing. It is just an interesting change because if they wanted to go the other way, they could have spent more time developing some of the flaws of the other characters. Like, whenever you add more development to a character before they got it, when you adapt, you are taking away time from developing your other characters, yep. Right? So whenever you spend time developing a character that wasn't supposed to get development yet, you're taking away development time from the other characters. And so when you have a complaint about a character being underdeveloped, you can say like, oh, well, maybe if they took time away from developing other characters too early or too quickly, you could have put it there. But I'm not saying the Ozai stuff was bad. I enjoyed some of the Ozai stuff. The one thing I didn't like, though, was with Azula. Azula's introduction I thought was pretty menacing. Like, I was all in on her introduction.
Yeah.
But they did the Netflix special that I don't like, where they did this with Cowboy Bebop, they did it One Piece, they did it here with Avatar, where they take characters who aren't part of the plot yet, and they give them, like, this B plot.
Yeah.
They did it with Vicious and Julia, they did it with Kobe and Helmeppo.
Yeah, they did do
and
that.
And now they're doing it with Azula, where Azula was not in season one, but now she is being puppeted by her father, and thus she ends up puppeteering
Zhao.
She ends up like being this integral part to Zhao's whole thing, and she's part of various episodes where she has this whole B plot. And then also, Azula was like a certified badass for a long time.
Yep.
Until the end of the series, where you see her break down and like you see the traumas hit her, and you see her kind of lose herself a bit and like show insecurity. I don't like that they showed her insecurity already in season one.
Yeah, Azula's supposed to be, you could not have said it better. She's supposed to be a badass.
Straight badass, Azula, like fear forever. Like,
Azula was my favorite character in the original show for so long because she comes on the scene, she zero diffs everybody she fights, including mm-hmm. the Avatar. She actually like sends him into the Avatar state. He hits his back on something at one point, and like he loses his bending at one point. She loses her bending at one point, and she still is able to completely evade everybody that's attacking her at one time. Okay, she has no fucking bending, and she is doing the app. You know what I'm talking about? She's like, it's like 8-on-1.
I think it's called the Day of Black Sun. I think might be the name of the episode where the sun gets like eclipsed and the firebenders lose their bending.
Okay, that's what it was. Because I was like, I know that the one girl can do a divination on you. She can literally hit your pressure points and she takes away your bending that way. She can just like hit you somewhere and next thing mm-hmm. you know, you can't bend anymore. She's broken, by the way.
Yeah, Ty Lee.
Yep. She's broken. Is that one of Azula's friends? Like, is that one of the girls?
Azula. Yeah, so it's Azula and the homies. It's Azula is Azula. Then there's Ty Lee, who she, like, can cut off your chakra and make it so, like, your entire arm goes limp and you can't bend. And then there's Mai, who she's kind of like a weapons expert. She uses, like, daggers and knives and shit.
So I like those characters in the original. Like you said, I kind of don't like that they're already a part of it. But the main thing that you touched on, and I cannot stress this enough, Azula was supposed to be this badass. No one was supposed to be above her or demeaning her. Because this makes her look like a pussy. And I don't say that because she's a girl. I say that because they're actually making her look just so much like a pussy. I can't even think of another word to describe it. Like, they make her seem frail and weak in ways, and she has to, like, fight back against her dad, which She shouldn't be doing that this early. She's supposed to appear as this greater than her brother character. Because that's how she, in the original, I just remember her being like, bro, Zuko was already a problem. Why is his sister so much worse? Like, why is his sister doing lightning bending?
She was devastating. Like, she was just better than Zuko in every way. Yes. She was more dangerous.
And she was cocky about it. She was so cocky about it.
She was super cocky. She was ruthless. Like, she was the, she, like, if a kitten was in her way, she'd kick, like, she'd kick it. You know what I mean? Like, she didn't fucking care. And there was no, like, break to her character. She was just, she was mean. And then it wasn't until later on that you saw cracks in her character. You saw the facade a little bit. And then I just don't like that here in season one, not only was she introduced, she was part of it, she was given it this B plot, but then they also showed cracks in her armor already. They showed instability in her mental state already. And I just don't really understand why, because part of what made that so impactful is that she was such a immovable problem for so long. And then she cracked. But
yeah, it's
and she had to be perfect. Like, her dad didn't really, that's the other thing. Like, her dad didn't really treat her like shit like that in the cartoon, and but she always performed perfectly that way. Her dad wouldn't treat her that way, whereas in this she's trying to perform perfectly and her dad's still treating her like shit. And like part of why she has a breakdown is because she has to perform perfectly all the time, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But I don't know, it just happens so quickly here.
Yeah, I don't really like the way they're making her. She doesn't have that badass feel anymore. They broke her already. She's already had a fucking mental, like, breakdown to a degree where she snapped. She's like, nope, I'm not fucking doing this anymore. I'm tired of being fucking played by you. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done. And he's like, you'll do what I say. He's like, she's like, nope, I'm fucking done. And then she lightning bends and just shoots lightning at a fucking random building. And then they're like, oh shit, she can lightning bend. And then she walks out.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, the lightning bending aspect, that was amazing. Like, seeing that scene, although it took a long time for her to do it, I was like, that's not useful in combat as long as you had to, you know, take to do that. But by the time we see her in season two, she'll just be doing it. She'll just be shooting lightning because she has to shoot Aang. Like, Aang has to get lightning. Aang has to get shot with lightning. And it can't be fucking a 3-minute spectacle. You know, it was like, I get it for drama's sake. It took her 3 minutes to do it, and I'm watching. I was like, oh, this looks really awesome, especially because I love lightning as an element. But I was like, that will never be combat ready if it takes you that long to, like, she had to, like, gather the fucking chi, and then she had to, like, bring the two fingers together, and then she closed her eyes at one point. Then she put her two fingers on her forehead and said, special beam cannon. And I'm just like,
on Cole Sapo. Like, she just started going in.
It just took way too long. But it was cool, and I get that it's a dramatization, right? So when she gets in combat, she'll just fucking put her two fingers up and then just shoot lightning. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. She's going to shoot Aang. He's going to get fucking Avatar state. He's going to get taken. She takes him out of the Avatar state. My man was in the Avatar state, and Azula knocks him out of it. And I was like, yo, this bitch just beat Avatar, or like, she caught Avatar Aang slipping and took him out of the Avatar state, which I didn't even know was like a thing. And then they explained, like, yes, not only that, but if you die like that, that's it for the Avatar. If you die in the Avatar state, for whatever reason, it's just like a random rule, but if you die in the Avatar state, it actually ends the entire lineage. Like,
it's because when you're in the Avatar state, all the spirits are connected. So if you die that way, all the spirits die, I guess. Like, fuck 'em.
Okay, and that way it does make sense. Yeah, that's very good. But it's so funny, like, if you die like this, and then right now it's entrusted to a 12-year-old boy. So the most vulnerable that the Avatar ever has been is for this 12-year-old boy, basically, who's in a war with the Fire Lord during Sozin's comet. It's like, oh god.
Yeah, it's dangerous. It is dangerous. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's just weird. The way they treat it, some characters is weird. And in general, though, like we said, Zuko, Iroh, Ozai, like, I do think they're done. Ozai feels fucking menacing.
Yeah, he does.
Iroh is...
So, Ozai, when they show him, he definitely does have this air of, like, I just kill at the first sign of any defiance, and I also am willing to sacrifice people at the first sign of, like, this is the best move that will help me to reach my goal. He does not care about individual people. He doesn't care about groups of people. He only cares about his goal. And he's even willing to sacrifice his family because, on one hand, I won't say that he's a complete monster with his children because he does actually have a heart for them. You could tell.
Yeah.
When they tell him that, you know, your son was a part of the whole fight in the north and there was a lot of casualties. And he says, and like, they show his face, but he's facing away from the guy who's telling him the information. You can see in his face that he's a little like, please don't let my son be dead. But he says out loud, well, if Zuko's strong, he'll be alive. And if he's not alive, then he was a weakling, and weakling, there's no space for weaklings, right? So he says something like that to keep up that image of being a hard body, but you know, you see it. And this is what I do like about him being a character already with a face. You do get to see, like, there is a slight slither of humanity, but it doesn't make up for, it doesn't change the fact that when you look at him, though, you still see, you do see a monster. Because, again, the way he talks to his son, the way he talks to his subordinates, the way he talks to his daughter, the way he treats his daughter, it's all horrible. And I guess that this could go into one of the things that I did write down was, there's this huge thing that they changed, but I think it's a great change. So we know that Zuko is banished in the original show and in this Netflix live action. He's banished, and he has this group of Fire Nation soldiers that are under his command. Right, you don't really get the full context of why until episode 5 when Zuko faces off against his father in an Agni Kai. So there was this whole meeting with the Fire Lords, and Ozai, his father, was like listening to everyone's plan. And after hearing it, Zuko, who's there as a little boy, just goes, "This is a horrible plan," like out loud in front of everybody. Right after his dad agreed that he liked the plan, so now you have the king, the Fire Lord, who says like, "No, this plan seems good." And then Zuko hears everything and he goes, "This is a terrible plan," just like out loud. And everybody's like, and then, you know, Ozai turns around. He said, "What did you say?" He said, "This is a terrible plan. You're sacrificing the 41st Division."
Yep.
And his dad's like, "Yeah, they are just a sacrifice, and sacrifices have to be made. You know, we're at war. It is what it is." And then one guy says, "They're all new recruits. They're expendable." And so Zuko's like, "Yeah, but that's not how you should look at people. Like, people who are weak can become strong," is what he says. He's like, "If you give them a chance, weak people can become strong." So this shows that Zuko has a bit of humanity in him, even though he tries to portray this hard body character, but he clearly has a humanity. So eventually his dad says, "We're going to do an Agni Kai. So we're going to fight father versus son." They get into the fight, and just like in the original show, Zuko prostrates himself and says, "I do not want to fight you," right? He like doesn't want to fight his dad. His dad's like, "I don't give a fuck about that. It's too many people watching now. Our honor's on the line." And you know how this prideful thing works. Once you start something like this, he can't like go, the Fire Lord cannot go back on his word of that, "We're going to have an Agni Kai." He can't be like, "You prostrated yourself, you apologize," what Zuko did. He can't be like, "Well,
by the way, when he took the fucking robe off, like,
he's Diesel.
He was just, he's Diesel, dude, in the cartoon, I love the way it just looked. Like, it was just, boom, and he was flexing and shit.
I like that the Fire Lord is considered the strongest firebender. I like that he's not just for show. I like that he is blatantly stronger than every other firebender. And it's really not like a debate. It's not really a close thing. It's like he is 100%. And also hand-to-hand combat and everything. Like, he's known to be the real deal. I love that about his character. But anyway, he gets to the Agni Kai. And like, you know, Zuko fights back. And I don't think that this happened in the original like this. But him and Zuko get into a full-on fight. And it looks amazing. Like, the fight
does look good.
This is another moment where Netflix did it right. They expanded on something that you do not get to see in the original. You do not see this long fight between Zuko and his dad. And I think that this is like really cool development. The same way I felt about episode 1, showing the massacre of the Northern Air Tribe or whatever. Like, I think that that was well done. And it's something that you don't see. And I think that expanding on stuff like that, I love it.
I could be wrong. I do think you see the Agni Kai in the original. I don't remember if it's in season 1 or season 2. I don't remember how long it is. I do feel like I remember seeing it, but I can't say we're 100% certain.
I think Zuko just prostrates, he cries, and then, like, I don't think he actively starts fighting against his dad. Like, I don't think that they have an actual fight.
Yeah,
I think I that remember. His dad sees him crying and says, like, "That's weakness," basically, and then he burns him.
He does burn the shit out of him. That does.
Yeah, but I don't think that Zuko starts doing his flip kick whip thing that he does. Like, I don't think he starts doing it. The shit that he does in the live action is, like, he fully fights his dad in the live action. He tries to actually injure him, and his dad tries to actually injure Zuko as well. Zuko ducks and dodges and flips over a lot of the fire waves that the Fire Lord sends at him. Obviously, the Fire Lord is holding back. That, without a question. He's not going full tilt on his son. You know that. But he is throwing stuff at him that, like, if you are unprepared, you will get hurt. And I like that. I like that it's not some, like, bullshit. It's like, no, I am going to try to physically, like, hurt you, and if you don't deal, then yeah, you fucking deserve to lose that arm or that leg or whatever it is. They fight, and it gets to this point where I don't interpret it this way, but I saw people on YouTube interpret it this way, that Zuko had a moment where he could have hit his dad with like a fireball to the face and potentially like won the Agni Kai. Now, I do think that he was going to, like, he could have taken a fire that was in his hand when his dad was like off guard for a second and tried to attack him with it. I don't think that it would have hit him though. I think that obviously the Fire Lord would have either fucking straight up to the face, took the fire on his face, and nothing would have happened because that his fire bending is on that level. He can breathe fire from his fucking mouth. Like, this guy is not the Fire Lord. When they first start showing him in the cartoon, they show the silhouettes of him breathing fire. They show silhouettes of him like in fire, like actually bathing in it. Basically, he's always been known as this character who's like a fucking salamander. Like, he can just fully take on fire. I do not think that a fireball to the face was going to do, I don't think it was going to do any damage if it even hit him to begin with, because most of the fight in the live action was him just dodging flat out everything. He was doing that like Matrix thing where you just like slightly move and dodge everything, like that really cool. It's taking him very little effort.
That shit is so OD.
Yeah, because Zuko's going crazy. Zuko's going all out crazy, and the Fire Lord's just like slightly dodging everything. So I wasn't too hung up on the whole like Zuko had the upper hand at one point. He was about to hit him with it. And then Zuko stops because he sees his dad's face, and he like can't imagine actually hurting his father. So he cuts the fire off in his hand, and his dad grabs the, you know, his dad like sees that, puts a hand over top of Zuko's fist, and then he starts to burn him, basically. You know, he's like,
and he talks about the weed. I think that might have been in the original. The whole thing with like him being able to hit him and then his dad being like, that's weakness.
You
like,
might be right.
The fact that you didn't, once again, I agree with you in a way where it's like, okay, if Zuko took the shot, it either A, wouldn't have done anything, or B, he would have dodged it.
Right.
But the point is, he didn't take the shot.
Exactly. And so his dad's like, he didn't even try.
Weakness. The fact that you didn't try is weakness.
Yep.
And that's another example of how you were saying earlier, how he, even though he's a piece of shit, he very clearly does have some level of care for his children, because after he burns his fucking face, the whole point of him doing this is that he's trying to train his son. He's doing this because he cares about his son. He wants his son to be ruthless as he is and to be able to take up the mantle of Fire Lord one day. And so when he's like in the hospital bed, when his son's in the hospital bed and he's talking to him and he's talking about the division or whatever, I don't remember the exact wording of it, but basically he's like, you still don't know, like you're still being weak.
Right.
That's when he ends up banishing him. But like the whole point is he's trying to train his son to become ruthless, to understand that these sacrifices are necessary in war. This is what we have to do as a Fire Nation. We have to be strong. And so part of his assholeness is that he cares for his son. He wants his son to be strong. It's like, you ever notice how like it's easier for whatever reason, it's easier to get angry at people you care about. Like if somebody you care about does something, you'll get angry at them sooner or faster than if somebody random does it. Cause like you don't care about that random person. So if they make a mistake, it doesn't matter to you. But if somebody you care about makes a mistake, you might get angry at them quickly, but it's not because you're trying to be mean to them. It's because you care about them. And so like you have this emotional reaction to them making the mistake.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's how I was raised. You know, I was definitely raised in like a household where my dad seemed to be more mad if I made mistakes than like you said, random other people doing it. And that's because, you know, I'm his son. I'm his responsibility. I'm the one that he loves me, not these other people who might do the same exact thing. It's like, no, you're in the wrong here for doing that. Right. Like I'm mad at you for doing it. I don't really care what they do. So I definitely get what you mean when you say that. And so, yeah, Zuko gets banished after this Agni Kai, because even after his dad comes to visit him in his little hospital bed thing and, you know, he's getting proper treatment, the Fire Lord comes to see him. Uncle Iroh tries to stop him. He's like, no, I need to see my son. And when he walks in the room, Zuko's still on all turkey time talking about like, you know, I still think that this is a terrible plan. Like just being a teenager, really. This is how teenagers are. They like, when you get into a fight with a teenager as a parent, and you know, I was a teenager at one point, I remember just being so rebellious that even if I might be wrong about something, I'm just going to keep on going down the road that I am to piss you off, because that's what teenagers do. So he, even after the Agni Kai, even after being burned, he's still telling his dad, you're still wrong. Give them a chance, right? Like, just because they're weak doesn't mean that they're expendable, that you should just sacrifice innocent lives. And he's like, you're still too weak. I'm going to let you go into the wilderness and that will be your teacher. And once he sends him out there, they flip back to the scene where Iroh was talking to one of the lieutenants on the ship who with Zuko, and he's talking about how like basically kind of shitting on Zuko a little bit. And Iroh lets him know the only reason you're alive right now is because of the sacrifice that Zuko made that day 3 years ago. He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, the division that was going to be sacrificed 3 years ago was the 41st division. Instead,
we're the 41st division.
Yeah. So that one. And so when you, in episode one, we did this podcast and you were talking about how like cringy some of the lines were. I think the last four episodes have the cringiest lines, bro. I really do. That was one of them. The last four have some of the cringiest fucking lines of all time. But yes, we're the 41st division. So this whole thing was to like too long, didn't read. Filer Ozai was going to sacrifice the 41st division. Zuko does not agree with it. Agni Kai happens. Zuko gets banished. And as punishment, is because you love them so much, because you love these weaklings so much, I'm going to give you the 41st division. You can take them and don't come back until you find the Avatar, which at the time was supposed to be an impossible task. The Avatar hasn't been seen for 100 actual years. So like, yep. It's basically saying, go fuck off somewhere and die. I'm giving you this escort group, the 41st division, because they're shit. I'm giving you them. And like they said, they're all really new recruits and expendable. So the only reason they're alive is because of Zuko. And that's what Iroh was trying to explain to the guy. And then it becomes this big reveal that, and this wasn't in the original show at all, but it becomes this big reveal that like Zuko essentially saved their lives. They were going to die. So mm-hmm. I like that a lot for the development of
Zuko. That is a cool plot point.
It's really awesome. I was like, oh, that's actually just amazing. Like that's nothing to be mad at about that. I think they did that whole thing well with the lining it up. Like how did he end up with these people, right? Like how was Zuko in control of these people if his dad hates him so much or whatever? He's banished.
So this is a side note. This is not talking about the show necessarily. The guy you're talking about, we're the 41st division. I forgot to mention this in the first recording of this show, but I am so impressed that they trained a monkey to act. They taught a monkey English. Like,
because he looks
that guy, bro, he looks like he's straight out of Planet of the Apes. Yeah. Like the OG, like old
it's
one from
it's the because they give him this ridiculous
the big lamb chops that he has.
Yeah, he has the big lamb chops. He also has
sideburns he has is great. When I was watching it, I was being so unserious. I was just like, guys. They trained a monkey how to act. Like, there's a monkey on screen right now. Like, he looks so fucking Planet of the Apes. Like, he looks like he's straight out of Planet of the Apes. It is crazy how monkey-ish he looks.
Yeah, they overdid it with the makeup and stuff.
I just wanted to say that.
They 100%, the facial hair, it's also exaggerated. I mean, I think most of the characters' hair in general is very exaggerated in this live action. I look at everyone's hair and I'm like, oh my God, like that. Some of the wigs are just so ridiculous, but the chops that this guy has, they're like Wolverine mm-hmm. chops, right? Wolverine sideburns, his chops are just so exaggerated to look like a Wolverine, right? That's like the whole kind of point of it. But they're so, like human hair just doesn't grow and be stiff like that. And the way this guy's hair is like the Elvis Presley thing. It's just so ridiculous. So he does look
insane. Speaking of actors, did you recognize General Zhao?
What's he from? Because I know that he's actually a real actor.
Yeah.
I forget where he's from, though, but I know that Zhao is the real actor in this series.
He's Jun Tao in Rush Hour.
Oh, shit.
He's the guy with the Asian guy, and he has like a blonde buzz cut, I think.
Yeah. He's the villain or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the very first one.
He's Jun Tao.
That's amazing. Damn. I know I recognized him. His English is very, very good. And Rush Hour, it just wasn't, obviously, because he was just playing that character, or maybe it's been 20 years since Rush Hour and he's just become fluent in English because
he got better at speaking English. Something Jackie Chan did not bother trying to do.
Oh, yeah. He was like, no, you guys will take me as I am. I'm authentic. But Jun Tao, yeah, he in the Netflix live action for Avatar, his English is so good that I couldn't even tell fully. I just knew I recognized the face.
Yeah.
Like you could tell when you're like, okay, what's this guy from? I didn't even bother looking it up because most of the actors are unknown. He was the one guy who I'm like, this guy looks recognizable. Everyone else looks like a random person.
Yeah. I thought Ozai looks recognizable to me. I don't know who it is.
Kinda, but he's also too muscular. I'm like, I'm trying to think about what Asian actor I know, because I do watch like Asian films and stuff like that. I love House of the Flying Daggers and pretty much all, like, you know, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I watched, what's the one that's predominantly Korean that came out? Parasite a couple years ago. It won Best Picture. I watch Asian films all the time. This guy that I looked at the filer, I'm like, he does kind of look recognizable, but I'm like, I also just don't know any Asian actor that is as muscular as he is. He is like overtly in shape.
He's a beast. Other than like, what is it? Legend of the Ten Rings or what was it called? I don't remember. He's pretty diesel too, from what I remember. The main character, the Marvel movie that we watched. Legend, Ten Rings
oh,
Legend.
Shang-Chi.
Yeah, Shang-Chi.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like he would fit perfectly in that. And maybe maybe he was in that, and that's why we kind of feel that way. But yeah, I can't think of what role he was in. I would have to just like Google it or whatever to just 100% find out. So yeah, the Fire Nation and their entire storyline and stuff like that, I think is probably the best part of the show so far. Like everything with the Fire Nation, it seems to be like really well done. You can almost treat the show like The Walking Dead, where the Fire Nation is like the zombies. They just come out of nowhere. They start attacking. People start screaming and shit like that. They destroy everything in their wake. And then that's just kind of like the entire premise of the season, because it's so depressing. It's like people living in hard times, then the Fire Nation appears.
Yeah.
It's pretty much because the show doesn't have any fun in it. So it's pretty much just like people living in hard times. Everyone's living in hard times. And then the Fire Nation appears and times get worse. And that's the first season. Like that's basically what this type of stuff you get in the first season. So
no fun allowed.
There's a bunch of things that I wanted to just kind of go over as like a recap segment. Maybe we can do, because I have stuff from episode 5, 6, 7, and 8. So episode 5, there was a whole spirit world stuff. So they discover the spirit world. Aang goes into it, but he accidentally drags Katara and Sokka into it. And what ends up happening is there's all these weird creatures and beasts in the spirit world that make it really scary. I would not personally want to be there, even though the one fox girl tried to say that, like, oh, it's awesome there. And like, no, bitch, it's really not, though. There's fucking things walking around like the Demigorgon. I'll pass. So while they're there, though, a really interesting part of development that I did like was that all of them have to confront a hard memory from their past. They all have to confront like some fever dream or confront a time in their life that was really hard for them. So for Sokka, it was this one time where he was out and he was basically in control of a ship and they almost capsized because of him. The ship almost fucking just got destroyed because Sokka did something wrong, but he was young, like a young boy at the time. And his dad and his teacher at the time, they were trying to say that like he did a good job, but as soon as he left the room, they had a private conversation. And he overheard it. And his dad was talking about how disappointed he is and how some people aren't meant to lead. And just saying all of these things about his very young son, how shit of a job he did and how everyone would have been fucked if it wasn't for you taking, like talking about his teacher, if you didn't take over when you did, we would have been in the water right now, whatever. So Sokka overhears this and it's like a traumatic moment for him. Just basically him confronting a failure that he had as a kid that lives with him still into his later teenage years. And that's like a real thing. Kids, you know, we're very hard on ourselves when we were children, because at the time everything seems so much more serious because you've only lived life up until that point. Now that I'm well into my adult years, I just feel like, oh, you look back, you're like, why did I care about that so much, right? Like, why did that matter so much to me? But as a kid, that's all, your whole world is that moment, right? So Sokka has to face that. Katara has to face, hers was dark as shit. So Katara wanted to learn how to waterbend. She's talking to her mother, and eventually the Fire Nation comes, and they're like, where's the waterbender? We know that there's one here. And if you tell us who it is, we'll spare you, even though obviously that's a lie, but they say that. So she hides Katara under like a table somewhere. And Katara is watching the interaction between this fire soldier and her mom. And eventually, because Katara decides to start waterbending for some reason, like just very slightly shittily, she starts waterbending a bucket that is very close to the firebender. So he sees it. He looks up at the mom because he's assuming that like, it must be you, because he doesn't see another person. He's like, it must be you doing this. So she's like, it's me. I'm the waterbender you're looking for. And frame zero, he just incinerates her from the face down. Like, he just
brutalizes her.
It's very, so this show does not shy away from like some HBO level shit. Like, it's very dark. People just get killed.
Which I'm not against. Like, I'm not against here's either. The thing. I think it's cool that we have some like high level darkness in the show, and they showed that, like we were talking about in our first recording of this, like when they showed the airbenders get murked, like that was dope. Like, I do think that was cool. They just need to offset all of the darkness with some more jovial lightheartedness. Yes. There's just not enough lightheartedness. But in these moments where you see like somebody just get HBO murked, it's like, it is cool. And I'm fine with that being in the show. I do like it.
Yeah. So she confronts that dream. She sees her mom being killed again, which I was like, damn, a young girl seeing her mom be burned alive like that, trauma, just extreme trauma. So that's hers. And then Aang, he ends up having a vision where he gets to meet with his sensei again. And he's like, no, this isn't like a dream. This is the real me. Like, I'm actually here. You're not in the fog anymore. And they have this conversation. His teacher basically like does this little cheating move on the Go game that they used to play. And it's like all this other stuff that they have this heart to heart. But he tells him like, I'll always be with you, you know, if you need me and stuff like that. A very heartfelt moment. And then Aang leaves. But they all just like have these crazy moments they have to face. So I thought that was like good for development purposes. But again, no joy, all sadness, all dreariness, all darkness. And then move on to episode 6. So episode 6 was amazing to me. It's the episode where Zuko saves Aang. And I kind of forgot that it was Zuko when he appears in the Oni mask. I like the way the episode starts.
The blue spirit.
The blue spirit. You see this guy appear, right? He has his Oni mask on. He has these two blades on his back. And he's sneaking into the Fire Nation. And he like is doing all this espionage stuff, which I thought I really like how it was almost like comical, the espionage, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like they look under the wagon and there's nothing under the wagon. Then they like, you know, they don't notice, but now he's on top of the ceiling doing a thing where you spread your limbs apart so you can like hold on to the ceiling. He's doing that. And then like one minute he's in the cart, then the guy looks back in the cart and he's not in the cart anymore. Just really like cheesy espionage stuff. I just like that type of shit.
It was awesome though. Yeah, yeah. I do like that. I like that too.
Yeah. He gets to Aang and he frees Aang, and then they like end up getting into a bunch of fights with a bunch of Fire Nation people. They do ladders across the courtyard, which I thought was also kind of cool, the way they like grab two ladders. The ladder thing was just cool choreography. They like grab two ladders and they like use it to pole vault, and then they take the second ladder and they pole vault off the second ladder, and they end up on the other side. And they eventually obviously escape, but it gets to this point where like Zuko reveals himself and Aang is like, oh shit, you know, you're not as bad as I thought you were, because remember, Aang had a very low opinion of Zuko when he let Iroh get captured, using air quotes there, because he didn't really let him get captured. But Iroh gets captured and Zuko abandons him. So Aang, that he's like, this is how he is. Now I see the real him. And Iroh's like, I don't think you really do. Because Iroh knows that his nephew's not a bad person. So yeah, that episode was really cool. They get into this heart-to-heart moment where Aang and Zuko are kind of like ready to part ways. So Zuko's on this boat and Aang is saying, hey, you ever think about like maybe in a different life, or if we met under different circumstances, we could have actually been friends. And Zuko gets kind of mad at the thought, because he does low-key have a soft spot for Aang, very clearly. Because why did you even bother to rescue him? And why are you not trying to kill him right now, right? Like, this is your opportunity. You could try to get him now. No one's around to stop you. If you can best him in a fight right now, you actually do get the prize that you won it. This is, he said, this means everything to me. Zuko has said that multiple times throughout season one. So he finally gets Aang in a spot where he could theoretically, like, if he could beat him anyway, he could theoretically take him back. But he just like, he tries to do a fire attack and Aang just does a fucking wind attack and knocks him back. And then the boat starts moving into the ocean. I thought that was a really cool scene, the way you just like.
It was a really cool scene. I do want to say also on the Blue Spirit shit, how you said earlier, how the Fire Lord is the guy. He's not only the best firebender, he is clearly insane hand-to-hand combat. Goes to show like how insane Zuko is, right? Because when he infiltrates, no firebending. Because if he firebends, he gives himself away that a firebender is trying to free the Avatar. And the firebender currently that has beef with Zhao is Zuko. So if he firebends at any point, he blows his cover. So he goes in there and he gets in fight and he does all this bullshit with no firebending. Like, just to show like some accolades and his skill level.
Zuko can fight his ass
being
off.
Able to do shit. Yeah, without having the firebend.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even really think about that or notice it per se, but you're absolutely right. He does do all of that without ever bending. He just beats everyone's ass that he comes across, and then obviously Aang does airbending to deal with the rest. But that is a feat in itself. So yeah, they have this little heart-to-heart moment, and then Aang poses the question, and even the way he says it, he doesn't say it with like a smile. He says it in like this sad way that I wish that it were this sullen way. Everything about him is sullen. Everything about him is depressed. Again, no joy, no happiness, no smiles. He's just all sad, all business, all focus. But that's basically episode 6. There's another part where he meets Roku. Roku is very jovial. Roku kind of makes a joke and tries to tell him that you got to do this. You got to, you know, stand on one leg and then start making mokey noises and shit like that. And he's trying to be funny. But Aang doesn't take to it. He just kind of looks at him sad and is like, tell me what I need to do. And is like, well, damn, bro, I'm trying to like lighten you up a little bit. Like, why are you so?
Yeah. You're
but this goes back to
like
the problem.
A little bitch.
Yeah, this goes back to the problem with the show is that like, there's no joy. There's no happiness. You know, Roku's trying to make a joke and Aang is just really not trying to hear it. So, but yeah, that's pretty much what I guess he does tell him about like, you do need to be serious because Sozin's Comet is coming essentially. Like,
oh, so they do mention that in the show. I don't remember.
I think he tells him that like the Fire Lord, you need to hurry up and master your bending. You need to like take shit seriously because a bad thing is about to happen. And he like alludes to it. I don't know if he explicitly says like, yo, the comet is coming back and you need to do it by the summertime. I forget exactly because I'm kind
of
like,
oh, you know what? I'm remembering. I think that doesn't get revealed till the end of like the last episode.
So the last episode, Ozai finds out about the comet, Sozin's comet.
Yeah.
But Roku does allude to like the future with Aang to try to get him to, you know, get him to be more serious about what's happening, even though you're talking to the most serious kid of all time already. You just like your script is written for cartoon Aang, but like you're talking to fucking
depressed serious Aang.
Yeah, like you don't have
that to... is something that happened multiple times, I feel like, in this show, where there's parts of the script, parts of the dialogue that were written as if you were watching events that happened in the cartoon.
Yeah,
but like those events didn't happen. You're talking to a more serious version of these characters. Yeah, like
these characters don't deserve these lines.
So like, yeah, so you're like, you're scolding characters in a way, and it's like they don't need to be scolded. Like they're fine.
Like they're on their mission, you know?
Yeah.
They're not lollygagging. Like Boomy, relax. They're actually doing it.
Yeah, they're doing it.
Like they're all fucking business. So episode 7 though, Admiral Zhao tries to straight up kill Zuko. There's like this whole ploy where they give false information about like Ozai wanting to do something crazy, and so Zuko has to sneak off into a little boat, and when he does that, he gets on a boat, he sees that there's like gasoline on it. It's something else, but let's just call it gasoline. The boat is like laced with all this gasoline on it. Zuko realizes that somehow, I don't know how, but somehow Zuko survives this explosion, that he like saw it literally about to happen. They show you him literally seeing the fire traveling on the boat to the barrels, and then the next time you see Zuko, he's just fully alive.
I will say this, I do think if you're going to surprise kill someone, one of the worst ways to do it is probably with fire on a firebender.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? Like Zuko probably could, you know, bend some of that shit out of the way.
Yeah, I think he just like waved it away. They should have showed that, to be honest. They should have did a flashback and just showed him like the explosion happens. Zuko does get blown into the water, but he does like a thing where he bends the fire away from himself and just like dissipates it.
Yeah.
Because even his dad does a punch at him. And when they first start fighting, his dad does a punch at him and this huge wave, it's a continuous stream of fire comes out. And Zuko like puts his hands out and starts like blocking it. He's literally, and it's a wave of fire. It's not like a lot of times when you see the fire bending in the show, they just like punch and a fire thing comes out. They kick and a fire thing comes out. And this like is really quick. The Fire Lord just straight up put his hand out and fire.
A continuous stream
of that shit. And Zuko's like holding his hand out and just straight up not taking any of it. So,
yeah, it's weird because that explosion is played in a way where it's like, how could he survive, blah, blah, blah. But I do think, funnily enough, and I think we're supposed to view it as like, oh, that could kill him. But if you take a second to think about it, I'm kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
Like, would an explosion kill a firebender if they noticed it, like, at the last, like, all they need is a split second. And if they're good enough firebender, like, that shit ain't.
Right. The only thing I could say is, like, blunt force trauma. If the explosion happened and the force from the explosion could obviously hurt them because that has nothing to do with the fire aspect.
Yeah.
But the fire part of it itself, if they could stop the fire from igniting, if they could, like, you know, prevent the fire from ever touching their body in a harmful way, because obviously fire can hurt them. We know that. But if they're bending it, then yeah, zero damage from the actual fire, which, you know, is kind of silly. But Zhao was supposed to be dumb anyway. That's kind of like part of his character. Yeah. He's supposed to be a little stupid. He's doing a lot of things that Iroh, in so many ways, is calling him dumb every single time he explains his plan. He's like, I'm going to attack the Northern Water Tribe. And he's like, you do realize that for several centuries, they've had this wall that they've never been penetrated through. And they also are like adjacent to these two fucking big mountains that protect them as well. There's no real way to like attack the Northern Water Tribe. They've always been a stronghold. And it's like, nah, but I got a plan. And also I have divine providence on my side. Just talking about some bullshit. And Iroh's looking at him like, you're just an idiot. You're going to get a lot of people killed. And ultimately he does, but not the way it seemed at first. But I do like, so the whole like plot with Zuko being killed by Zhao, obviously, you know, even if you never watched Avatar, you only seen this live action, you know that Zuko didn't die there. Azula, she had her lightning bending moment and that whole thing. She like tells her dad, I want a bigger role. Let me out of here. Aang gets discouraged by the Water Avatar. So he meets the Water Avatar and this guy is sour.
He fits right in.
Yeah, Aang is like, oh man, like can you teach me how to do stuff? And he's like, no, I can't teach you anything about the Avatar state. He's like, but why not? Certainly you were able to do it. You used to be the Avatar. He's like, I spent my entire life fighting in the spirit world and it left my body maimed and destroyed and corrupted. And he like opens his chest out, like he opens his jacket and his body's all mutilated and shit. And he's like, it made me very bitter. It made me a very angry person. And so he's just as sour. Then Aang becomes more fucking sour. Like he needed that. So then like when he comes out of the fever dream with the Avatar, Katara sees him and she's like, hey, did you end up meeting the Avatar? And he's like, yeah. She's like, how did it go? And he's like, it didn't go so well. I'm just like this fucking kid has been traumatized over and over again. Like, this adult just fucking showed his battle scars to a kid. Why'd this fucking adult just reveal his fucking mutilated body to Aang and tell him that he spent his wife's face got ripped off and stolen by a monster, and he fucking fought for 50 years on the spirit world and he lost? And that's, bro, everything about this show is depressing. There is no joy, no happiness in Avatar live action at all. It's all fucking sad. So yeah, that, I don't know, that whole thing, the sexism though, Katara versus the master and like women can't fight, that was like, I was like, okay, this makes sense. These are the times, the healing. Sokka, yep. Sokka sees the fox girl. He realizes that she's the fox girl.
I got a good laugh when the fucking, there's the scene where like before they go to war and they're like, what are we going to do? And then like, I don't know, they just have this weird, in my opinion, kind of unearned moment, but where they're just like, let us fight. And like, it shows all the girls. Mm-hmm. And Connie called it like a Great Depression moment. I laughed so hard at that because there's like all these girls like looking up. And they're like, let us fight. Look, we can all fight. And I don't know, just like, once again, it's one of those things that kind of happens so quickly. But also, I do feel like, and we talked about this when we watched it, like the little group that we watched it with, like if the war breaks out, like who's stopping you?
Yeah.
Like like if a firebender comes up and like there's three women there, like are y'all just going to stand there? Like if y'all can, you're just going to let them kill you? Like who's going to stop you from fighting? Like
that's a really good point.
If the shit's going down, like defend yourself.
It almost sounds like they're like, all confined. I don't need permission. It almost sounds like they're all confined to an infirmary. And
yeah, when they're not.
Yeah, it almost seems like that though. Like they're all of the women are in an infirmary area. And when the men are mutilated or fucked up, they like take them to the infirmary. And then there's a bunch of women and waterbenders there that'll heal you. It's kind of what it's, they didn't show that, but that's kind of what I have
felt like.
I have to assume.
Look, you do need an infirmary. You should leave some of the women out of the fight. If the women are the only people that know how to heal because that's the way they decided to do it, then you should leave some of them out of the fight. 100%.
Yeah.
Because like you need healers, but you know, but I guess on the other side of the coin though, right? And this is also where I think it kind of doesn't make sense. Katara, being who she is, she knows how to fight. She didn't grow up in that atmosphere. Those women, nothing against these women, right? But those women probably don't know how to fight.
Yes.
So on the other side of the coin, I also don't really think it makes sense for them to stand up and volunteer to be like so gung-ho about fighting, because based on the culture they were raised in, they probably don't know how to fight. They were never trained or taught offensive techniques.
Yeah, you make a good point there. Katara wasn't from the Northern tribe or whatever.
Yeah.
So she wasn't Northern from
tribe, yep.
Yeah, she wasn't from the Northern tribe, so she does know how to fight because she grew up in a much rougher area with her brother. But these women have always been raised and treated like they cannot possibly do it. So genuinely, they just don't know how. It might actually be dangerous to have these women fight at the last minute, right? Like,
yeah,
that's a good point. I didn't even think about that, but like, yeah, but in war, it's like, yeah, all hands on deck. Like, we need everybody that we can, even if you guys are just going to bend some water to block a fireball. Because that was cool that you saw incoming fireballs being blocked by a bunch of waterbenders. Just kind of
sending out, like, dude, ice. The war scene, the action scenes all look good, like, for the most part.
Speaking
like,
of which, episode 8 opens up with Aang, Katara, and Sokka jumping onto a firebending warship.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, they jump on the ship, they land on it, you know, they jump off of Appa. And they take down the warship. And it's really cool. All the choreography, Aang and Katara do like team attacks together with water and wind. Yeah. They do all these team attacks. They do all this stuff. They neutralize the warship. Sokka beats on the control panel and like they blow it up. They get into the air and they're like, whew, okay, let's see how many more we have to do that to. And then they see that there's 100 more ships in the ocean. And it's like, okay, I love the way the director did that particular thing. Because when they took down that ship, I was like, that's actually insane that three kids landed on a warship and like straight up took it down. But then you see the significance of it and it's like, oh, it's nothing. Like, you guys did nothing.
Yeah.
You did probably less than 1% of their fleet went down. And it took, just to be clear, they did take it down, but it wasn't zero effort. Like they were.
So you're going to get gassed long before you take out all the ships.
Right. You could tell that when they take down the first one, it's kind of like a exasperated moment where they take like a deep breath. They're like, okay, let's see how many more we can do that to. And then they see the hundreds of them. They're like, oh, it's no point. Let's just go back. So that was a really good opening because it made it seem like a positive for the heroes. But then you look at it, you're like, oh, it's not, you guys didn't put a dent. You didn't do anything. It's the fucking long night again. Like, it's the Game of Thrones long night. Like, you guys didn't do anything.
Yep.
So that was really good. Fire Nation attacks. More sexist bullshit happens. Katara versus Zuko. That was also amazing. There was a line where Aang is like, go easy. And Zuko's like, I'm a little too fired up for that today. And Aang is like, oh, I wasn't talking to you. And Katara, Katara like takes her fighting stance, and Zuko realizes like, oh, you think that she needs to go easy on me. And when Aang leaves the room, Zuko throws fire, Katara blocks with water, and they get into this fight, and the fight is genuinely good. Like, he's going crazy.
It's a good ass fight.
Yeah, she freezes him at one point in this really fucking cool ass way, but then he starts breathing out hot air and fire. And I thought that was like, that's his dad. That's a technique that his dad does. And I thought that was really fucking cool, seeing him like breathe the fire out of his mouth. Because normally the way it works in Avatar is that if your arms or your hands get bound, you're powerless. It's kind of what you're to interpret a lot of the times for benders. So when he was bound with his arm, she thought that like, yeah, the fight's over. You can't bend anymore. But then he started to breathe it out of his mouth, and he clearly breaks free of it.
In the Fire Nation, being able to firebend with your mouth is definitely an advanced technique.
Yes.
For the most part, all firebenders use their hands and feet. Being able to like control the firebending with your mouth is it's a higher level technique.
Yeah.
And then, you know, to go off onto other branches. Like, there's, like we said the other time, there are branches of bending and branches of styles and skills and level ups. It's not all the same thing. Like, the one guy can fucking bend from his brain and do the combustion thing.
Yeah, combustion bending. You know what I was thinking? Fire bending should also have steam bending or like smoke bending or something of that nature.
Yeah, yeah. Where like you basically do it and like you cut the fire off and just create the smoke.
Yeah, that, because smoke inhalation kills people too. So it could be very useful, or to escape stuff like that. Like, it would be really cool to be able to do some kind of, I just like in Korra, and eventually we will cover Korra one day as well. But in Korra, you get to see all these different mutations of bending. You know, we already know about blood bending and stuff like that, the healing from water bending, but there's a lot of, there's flight, there's the magnetism, there's the combustion bending, there's lava bending, which I think is earth bending's one of its mutations.
Yeah, it's funny because, now, not saying that this was all, but I remember because they show lava bending, I think only once in, maybe more than once. They show lava bending in original Avatar, but it's only ever done by Avatars. They show Kyoshi do it, and they show Roku do it. And I remember theorizing at the time that, oh man, lava bending can only be done by an Avatar because it's a mix of earth and fire bending. So I was like, oh, that's really fucking cool. It's an earth fire bending mix. And so it's like a permutation that only Avatars can do. But then Korra has Bolin, an earthbender, do lava bending. And, you know, it's still cool. It's one of those things where, like, at the time, I was like, I don't think it makes sense. And I still am not 100% on it, but I'm fine with it. It's like, I think it would have been cool if it was like a mix.
I agree. I do think it's a little weird for an earthbender to be able to do something that inherently just has fire involved.
Yeah.
Like, no matter how you, like, there's an immense amount of heat associated with, like, lava. So I just think that it should 100% either be a straight up permutation of firebending or a mixture of the two, like you said originally, with Avatars only being able to do it, and Avatars having access to a bunch of different mutations because they can do combinations of bending in general.
Yeah,
that would have been really cool. But yeah, I just thought about like different ones they could have. Earth also has the extrasensory thing that Toph can do. She's really one of the only people who has it on that level where she can like straight up, she can see. As long as you're not airborne, Toph can, she can just see. If you're on the ground, she can sonar better than anyone else and know exactly where everyone on the ship can. She can do some fucking end technique from Hunter x Hunter. Like, she can do the shit
that the king.
She can do the shit that the king did. But if you're airborne, like Azula showed, it doesn't really matter much. Like, bitch, you can only sense me when I'm on the ground. Azula is just that girl. So
that's the thing on Toph. I hope that there's obviously no way she won't be blind, but when they bring her into, like, basically the way they tone down so many character traits and flaws of people.
Yeah.
Like, I could just see them, like, I don't know. Like, I just hope Toph is Toph. Like, I want her to be blind. I want her to be an asshole.
There are jokes that are made in the original Avatar about Toph being blind. And I think that they're going to cut all of them. Because the jokes that they make about Toph, like, I forget, it was either Katara or Sokka or somebody. But they, like, genuinely joke about her being blind. Like, they make fun of her for not being able to see.
And then there's also like, which her is something making that, jokes.
That's something that kids do, by the way. Just to be clear.
Yeah.
A kid sees another kid with any kind of disability, ailment, or anything, and a kid is going to say it, even very small children, like I'm talking about younger than teenagers, younger than 10 years old, they just say what they see. They'll just say it. Like, they'll just say whatever. Like, why is that kid's eye so weird looking, mommy? Like, they'll just say anything. But also, teenage kids, knowing that it's wrong, will still just be like, you're fucking blind. And they'll, you know, they'll make jokes about it and they'll laugh about it with their friends because kids are fucking horrible. So taking that
there's
out.
There's a big episode where Katara and Toph like get in a a tense argument, and Katara says some, I don't remember specifically, but she says some fucked up shit that, you know, looks bad for Katara, but like that's part of her character. That blow up makes you a person.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Toph moments is when they're looking for something and they can't find it, and Toph goes, "Oh, look, there it is." And then everybody gets really hype and they look, and she goes, and then she looks at them and she like waves her hand over her face and like makes this dumb face showing that she's blind. And then she says like, "That's what it'll sound like when one of you like spot her," or whatever, like something like that. But like, I'm scared stuff like that'll get taken out, because like that adds life to the character.
Yeah, because, you know, she, I mean, like, accepts that she's blind and she's okay with it. You know what I mean? Like, she,
yeah,
it's like her, she can make a joke about it herself. If she can make light of it herself, that's also, for people who have this kind of disability, that's a good thing, to show that somebody living with this type of ailment can actually be okay with it and like try to make light of a bad situation. You know what I mean? Obviously it sucks to be blind,
yeah,
but some people are fucking blind, right? Like, it is what it is. So
we'll see. I mean, you know, we're not at season two yet. I just, you know, I'm very, like I said, there's stuff about the show that I liked, stuff that I enjoyed, especially visually. I think visually it looked really
visually,
nice.
Visually, Demon Slayer was the best way to describe it. It's literally Demon Slayer.
Yeah, Demon Slayer.
It's amazing.
But, you know, the substance was lacking.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, when I eat a sandwich, a gaps,
you know, with
when I eat a sandwich, like I eat thick sandwiches. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I put too much on it. And this was like this is like one of those sandwiches you got when you were a kid.
Yeah.
You know, one piece of ham.
A Jimmy John's sandwich. Those sandwiches have no meat on them at all. They fucking give you like two strips of lunch meat. It's so bullshit. I'm glad that Jimmy John's is going out of business. Good riddance. Fucking Jimmy John's.
But on the other hand, there is, like you brought up, there's things they added that is good substance. Like the thing they added with the 41st Division. I think that is a very good ad that adds substance to the show.
That was very good.
And creates more meat on the bones. I just always have this weird push and pull when I see that you add substance, you add meat to something, but it almost feels like it's at the sacrifice of substance in other places. Like, it feels like you took substance out of other places, character development out of other places, plot development out of other places, and then you added in character development, plot development in different places. Yeah. And it's like, well, why not just develop the characters that need to be developed instead of developing new ones? Like, it's cool that you're developing new ones, but,
yeah. You know, it would have been really cool if Azula only showed up in the 8th episode towards the end. And the only thing that they show of her is she comes in when they feel like Zuko has failed. She comes in and she starts saying, "Father, I've completed my training." And she starts doing a lightning bending thing. And then she shoots lightning.
And then they
show her do this like really evil smirk. And then they show her dad do a smile. And that's like, that's the...
That would have been sick.
See, what I'm directing. I'm literally directing. And that's the only scene of Azula. Because then people who have watched the original are like, "Oh shit, Azula, bro. Azula's going to be in season 2. It will get you hype. Instead, what we get was this pussy Azula who gets fucking fucked on the entire season by her dad, literally just toying with her emotions and being an asshole to her for no goddamn good reason. It just wasn't a good showing for her at all. I don't feel like the audience who only sees this live action is going to get the true heart of Azula.
Nah, there's no way you could feel the terror of her.
That's a good word, like, terror, because she is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, the way she's been introduced is just completely different. And so we don't know what's going to happen in season 2. I do want to see it. I'll see this. I'll see the One Piece season 2. I'll see all the season 2s and I'll talk about them. But, you know, I'm worried about where it goes and how they'll change or fix certain things.
I also want to say, I think that the way Iroh is depicted in terms of just like his character is really well done in the live action. We did say this already. What I don't like, though, I don't like that his firebending and his fighting and stuff like that doesn't seem as OP as it should. So what I remember of Iroh from the original show is that he is mostly a pacifist, but I also remember that if he does need to do anything physical, he's outrageous at it. And he's known to be like this revered, broken ass guy. And I kind of didn't really get that from this show.
And almost every situation they were in, Iroh could have probably like no different.
That's what I was thinking. And I'm like, I don't really feel like it's, and I'm trying to put myself in the mind of a person who never saw the original Avatar, who doesn't know that Iroh could just break himself out of cuffs and walk out of a prison cell that's supposed to be impenetrable, like it's nothing, right? Mm. Like, Iroh could have been the Fire Lord, right? Like, he is on that level. He's very, very powerful, but he just has a heart. And so, therefore, he obviously wasn't chosen to be Fire Lord because his brother is way more cutthroat. So, watching all 8, now that I have the full picture, I'm like, man, in all the scenarios, like when he was up against Zhao and stuff like that, and Zhao started trying to run away and he shoots like the fire at him and Zhao ducks off into the forest. I'd rather they just had Iroh not even bend, because I feel like Iroh taking a flamethrower shot at somebody, it should just hit. Like, or it should either hit them or it should just be so much fucking fire that it's like, bro, what the fuck was that? Like, this old guy who seems to be like so kind-hearted did that. I wanted it to be like that kind of thing, but it's just like when he started firebending, it just seemed like any other person's firebending.
It didn't show him being like broken.
No, it didn't give me broken. And if I'm a person who likes nerd shit and I keep hearing about this Dragon of the West stuff, I'm waiting for this guy to do something and I'm poking him with a stick. Like, go on, do something. Like, he's not really doing anything.
Yeah.
So it never gave me like, oh shit, Iroh's broken. At no point did I really feel like that. I just was going off of what I already knew. Like, I'm watching it like, yeah, I know Iroh's broken. It's kind of cool. When a guy held the rock above his head, he was mad at him and he kind of looked up at it. I was like, oh, this would be a great moment to just have him like, zero diffs that like he just incinerates that boulder and then he's like, oh, silly me, sometimes I get carried away, and like he just like set, and then he like, but he just like keeps the cuffs on and just goes quietly with the guy like who's transporting him, right? And the guy's like terrified, like, holy shit, like I thought I was gonna kill this guy, and he just fucking incinerated the gigantic stalagmite I have above his head, and then he's like, oh, silly me, like, what was I doing? And he just like goes quietly as a prisoner and he lets himself be put into a jail cell. That'd have been like really telling. Stuff like that is more so how the original Iroh felt. This one just feels too pacifist and too normal, too regular.
Yeah, he's just kind of there. Something that's, I don't know if they're going to cover really at all. I'm curious what they're going to do with the romance, because they don't really have any romantic tension from what I remember with Aang and Katara, but the actors feel like they're so different in age. Like, Aang feels like he's a lot younger than Katara than he is in the cartoon. And so I do wonder if that's going to be part of the series, because Katara's actor is just older than... Like, Aang's actor is, like, actually 12. And Katara's actor, I think, is, like, 18 or something. I don't know. So I do wonder how they're going to do that, if they're going to do that, if they're going to do the romance thing. They look so visually different.
Do they fall in love at the end of Avatar?
Yeah. They get married.
They end up together, right? Okay.
Yeah. They get married, yeah. And... So, you know, I don't know. This isn't necessarily, I'm not saying this is a good or a bad thing. I'm just curious what they're going to do with it. And then also, this, once again, this isn't whether or not the show's good or bad. I'm also curious what they're going to do, because Aang's actor's on the cusp of like actual puberty. I think he's like legit like 12 or 13 years old. I don't know. He's really young. So I don't know what they're going to, like, it took them, I think, 6 or 7 years to make season one, because this got announced in like 2018.
God damn.
When is season two going to come out? Like, is it coming out next year? Because I feel like they don't have that much time before Aang has a beard, you know? Like,
if he gets too tall, that's another concern as well.
Yeah.
He cannot be tall. So you do have to do these seasons, I feel like, consecutively. You cannot let this boy possibly outgrow Katara. That's just, it's not supposed to be.
No. That'll be bad.
Once he starts to look, you know, older, it's just not going to hit the same way. If I could tell that he's shaving, like, once I could tell that Aang has...
Once Aang shows up with a fucking razor burn, like a little razor cut on his face.
Once I could tell that Aang's been shaving, once I see that Aang has had a 5 o'clock shadow, I think I'm going to just cut it off. So they need to, like, yep. We can't have a Stranger Things thing happen where the kids become adults and they're supposed to be 12 still. Like, Stranger Things actors are all 27. I don't know how long they think they're going to be having to
My God.
How long these 27-year-olds are supposed to play these fucking 14-year-olds, but they got to relax. Like, there's only so much time before
when did... Is there supposed to be another is the next season even announced? Like, when's the next season?
No, it is not. We don't know anything about the next season of Stranger Things. And for all intents and purposes, the black one could be an NBA now. So I don't know what they're going to do. Like, I follow him on Instagram. He is a man. That is a grown... Listen, look at the actor.
Oh my God.
Google Stranger Things black actor. Do whatever you got to do to find him. He has a beard now. He looks like fucking James Harden. He's tall as shit.
How are they going to do?
They're going to have to CG him. Get
this season done. Like, oh my God.
They're going to have to CG him. Bro, he is like 6'3 now. There's no fucking world where they're going to tell me that this kid is 14 again. It's like at the end of Harry Potter, the guy who played Harry Potter, forget his name. The guy who played Harry Potter, he also, by the end of it, he had a 5 o'clock shadow. Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, he had a 5 o'clock shadow. I think his name was like Elijah something or whatever. But yeah, or Daniel Radcliffe. Is that his name? That sounds
like it. Daniel Radcliffe. Elijah Wood is Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, Frodo. So Yeah, I don't know. Stranger Things needs to hurry up. Avatar needs to super hurry up because Aang. Yeah.
I just looked up a picture of him.
Does he have a beard in one of the pictures?
He looks like an R&B singer.
Yes.
Like he looks like like.
Yo, he had a shirtless picture because he's been like working out a lot. He just has the body of a grown man now. Like he's like pretty jacked and everything. Like, you know, good for him taking care of himself. But the point is he's not a kid. Like he's
not a kid at all.
He's embracing that the fact that he's like 27. So I don't know. They're gonna have to figure something out. But yeah, that's that. So I think we can just end it off there. You know, the rest of the stuff that happens during episode eight is just that like Zhao ends up killing the fucking moon spirit. It happens pretty much exactly the way it happens.
I am Zhao the Moon Slayer.
Yeah.
Like he says some random
shit. He kills the koi fish and then the girl has to give her life up. Very similar to what happens in the actual show. All of that good stuff. And then Zhao gets killed. The end. Sozin's Comet's on the way. That's the end of season one. Sozin's Comet's coming. Summer, you know. So overall, I think the show kind of sucks just because of the fact that it doesn't have the essence of Avatar after seeing all of it. I just think that it's not. I don't think kids. So the original Avatar cartoon, I think, is both for kids and teenagers and even adults can watch it and they can enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think if a kid watched Avatar on Netflix, like a young kid, like a 7-year-old kid, I think it's a little too dark, too deep.
And I don't think it would have any lasting impact on them, right?
Yeah.
Like the original show had a lasting impact on people for various reasons. And I don't think if this is your first experience with it, I don't think these characters would last on you. I don't think they would have an impact on you where you would like really feel and remember them the way the originals did. I just don't think they're written in the way. I don't think the tone of the show is handled in a way where that impact would happen.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I just, I don't know. The characters are just, they're devoid of fun. They're devoid of happiness at all. They almost seem unrealistic.
I mean, one of the things that was exciting about this Netflix adaptation when it got announced in like 2018 is that the original writers of the show were on board directing it. They were helping create the show. About a couple years later, the original writers left due to creative differences. They said that we were brought on in order to help steer the show in a certain direction and keep the tone of the show. And the original writers, the people that wrote the original cartoon, could not agree with what the direction Netflix was going in. And Netflix wouldn't, like, they brought them on to like help steer the show. And then Netflix wasn't. So the point I'm making is that the original writers left the show due to creative differences. And if the people that wrote the story don't agree with the creative decisions that you're making, I don't know, there's probably an issue there.
Yeah, there's probably something fucking wrong. Yep. Very unfortunate. But we'll watch season two. I don't think it's like a dumpster fire of a show. There are good things about it, like we talked about. It's definitely watchable, but it's not Avatar The Last Airbender that you saw on Nickelodeon at all. It doesn't have the essence of that.
And I believe it's confirmed, like, season two and three have already been funded or whatever.
Well, they spent $120 million, I believe, on season one. So I feel like it's one of those things where you committed this much already, this much resources to this show. You kind of have to, you know, you kind of have to continue, in my opinion, just we'll because, see. You know, and it probably did do well because a lot of people watch season one just because of, you know, we grew up on it, right? I don't know how many returning viewers they're going to get for season two, but we shall see.
We'll see.
All right. Well, that concludes this episode. So let's give a shout out to the people over on our Patreon. There are a lot of you. And as of right now, it is the very beginning of April 2024, which means that a new cycle has just started. So if you do not hear your name and you feel like you should be at the party member or higher tier, just check your Patreon. Check that everything is still working. Because sometimes I know people get new credit cards. Sometimes it declines. If something declines or whatever, we do get a notice on our side that like there was a decline when it tried to charge their payment method. But I usually let you guys take care of that. Patreon usually sends like an email or something. So without further ado, we have Three Cart Crews, Leon, Quest, Hylian, Dimitri Barnes, Father Multiverse, Dom the Goat, Giovanni Avalos, Alex Flamer.
Three Cart Crews is still
wild. Oh, it's the best name. Alex Flamer, Ari Reynolds, Dan Vrabel, First to Home, Mitchell Niles, Vince Marquette, Dallas Bailey, KJ, Roz Weiss, Agents Over Tengu. That needs to change, by the way. Come on, Vincent. Sarah Maria, Alex Ahern, Philip Campa, Edison Club, Kyle Batelho, Guac is Extra, Sugal, Vicky Venomon, Elijah Barfault, and then
Tyler Tadeo, Volvi the Mega Monarch, Enraged Peacock, Janitor 215, Joshua Carroll, Eric Chai, Brian Moore, Type 336 is the Soul King Baby, Gingerilla, Move the Crown, just a little nasty sometimes, but not Diddy nasty.
All right, who is this person? Because they have some amazing fucking names. That's good.
Frozen Go Dojo, Anthony Did Nothing Wrong, David V, Nextastic, B-Dog 23, Felipe Glenn, Sleeping Saint, Hershey Bar, Empoister, Romeo Junk Synchron, Schneider, Tyler Frasher, Sasha Egger, Daniel Anderson, Daroa, Owen Tedford, Noah Mowdy, Chicken Toaster Strudel, Jordan Eastman, Robert Light, and Trainee Joey 182.
Again, thank you guys so much for all the support. We appreciate it going into April. Of course, there will be a Patreon exclusive episode in the month of April, as well as early episodes and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're hearing this right now, this episode probably doesn't come out for at least another week to everybody else. The episodes usually go up early for both the progression series and the podcast. And yeah, so we're definitely ahead of schedule right now. And this episode for sure is coming out like a whole week plus from the time that you guys are hearing it, or at least from the time that this was posted on the Patreon, right? Because it'll be posted on Patreon super early, and then it'll come out like a week or two before it actually comes out publicly. So just make sure you're checking out your benefits, you know what you're getting and stuff like that. And for people who just support just because they want to support, we also really appreciate you as well. That means a lot to us. I know someone said that they literally, when we released episodes and stuff on Patreon, they listened to them on Patreon, and then they listened to them again on Spotify when they come out. And that,
hell yeah,
that is insane, and really, really appreciate stuff like that. Just hearing that is like, damn, you really love the podcast. So as always, say, do the things that make you happy, including enjoying Avatar, The Last Airbender on Netflix, even though I don't think it's a perfect show anywhere near perfect. I do think that it's good enough in areas that it is good to watch it and to get through it. And I do think
it's good enough to watch.
It's good enough to watch. It's just good enough to watch. Yep. So, you know, as always say, though, do the things that make you happy. And yeah, let's get out of here. We'll catch you in the next one. Peace out.
Peace. Thank you.